walk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its scenes while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed, flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe
interesting set of words. Words that affect me very strongly in this piece of music. People hearing without listening. Good evening, Jeffrey Bennett. On a rare installment of The Edge of Darkness on a Wednesday night. Typically, we do health-related issues to help with you on Wednesday night, but there's things that have pulled me away from that this week. Whatever I have tried to do in life, I have tried with all my heart to do well, whatever I have devoted myself to. I have devoted myself completely in great aims, and in small, I have always thoroughly been in earnest. Charles Dickens. In the words of his great-great-grandson, my friend Charles Dickens, he states that he usually has two or three commentaries or essays or chapters for the book that he's writing at any given time, but he tends to switch between them as his muse abets. Last week, he was shifting gears from a business mode to his alter ego and preparing to work on an existing project. And a friend of his called with an enthralling idea for an article. I happen to be that friend. I called Charles to propose a title fitting for this intriguing moment in America. As Charles and I discussed his current project, the appeal of this recommendation that I gave him piqued his interest with great expectations. And as the possibilities unfolded, the outline and the theme materialized. Charles frequently entertains the idea of adapting existing literary titles to his purposes. And this suggestion, Great Expectations, was to do just that. And as Charles states, buckle up, buttercup. Because he's exercising his literary license before it is revoked. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. The age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. Charles Dickens, The Tale of Two Cities, 1859. My father's family name being Pirrip, and my Christian name Philip, my infant tongue could make of both names nothing longer or more explicit than Pip. And so I called myself Pip, and came to be called Pip. Charles Dickens, Great Expectations, 1861. The story of Great Expectations followed the childhood and young adult years of Pip, a blacksmith's apprentice in a country village. Suddenly comes into a large fortune, his great expectations, from a mysterious benefactor. And so Pip moved to London, where he entered high society. That opening sentence, Charles tells me, reminds me of the exuberance and the promise of a young, eager, fledgling republic some 250 years ago. Limitless possibilities, unbounded potential, and a burning desire for self-determination. The founders, our founders, could fashion a representative republic based upon life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, where all men were created equal and no one would be above the law. And they would craft a constitution to govern this republic, flexible in design and robust enough to weather the inevitable storms. And it would provide for most of the eventualities they envisioned, and even be amenable, adaptable as the needs changed. And it established a government in three parts, working in concert to prevent one from dominating the others. And the republic's name at birth was the United States of America. But our amusing penchant for slang and patois, regional pronunciations or provincial usage, as it were, America becomes Merca, coined by number 43 with his Texas drawl. Who would that be? Bush? Another of Charlie's all-time favorites is nuclear. Be patois for nuclear. Oh, you gotta love them Texicans, right? Our republic, my friends, recently celebrated its 247th birthday just weeks ago as a republic. And Charles finds himself contemplating the opening line of Dickens' novel, A Tale of Two Cities, as a parallel to our republic. It was truly the best of times and the worst of times for our republic, as it says in the opening of The Tale of Two Cities. Charles doesn't believe that any sentence encapsulates the American aspirations and ambivalence better or more clearly than that. We were the envy of the planet. We had everything going for us. Life was good. Not perfect, but really good. Now, let's be real. Every republic has problems, and America is no different. But we were on a roll until just a few years ago. We cooperated as a republic to resolve our differences and build bridges, not walls. But there's always a few elitists who believe they know better than everyone else. But that's what makes them elite. Because they are above everyone they know. They know that their way is the best and the only way. But unfortunately, being elite requires steadfast narcissism as a significant personality trait. And this unbridled self-assurance endows them with a planet-sized ego that can easily control anything and everybody, or so they think. Because you see, it also blinds them to facts But you see, interestingly, facts play no part in these lives. It's all about feeding that gargantuan ego. Truths like socialism and communism never work. Practitioners have tried myriad permutations, all failing to provide the pledged results. And these egotistical cult leaders often attract unsophisticated and gullible followers to their sect with pseudoscience and wild prophetic claims. And the climate catastrophe is a salient example. Now, one such claim is that the polar ice caps will be gone by 2008, and the East Coast will be inundated by 2012. If only that had happened, but that's another story. The latest prophecy that we're getting today is that the Earth will be uninhabitable by 2030. Just another manufactured calamity. And it's so compelling that the United Nations has joined said cult. And yet the impetus for this diversion from reality is not altruistic, but is authoritarian. And then, of course, there's the recent Wuhan pandemic, which illustrated the power of fear as a tool to usurp control. Flip-flop Fauci and his devotees bamboozle the world with more pseudoscience and outright lies about this manufactured virus. Now, we're still unraveling the obfuscations years later, but since Big Brother has nearly unlimited power through weaponizing law enforcement and consolidating media control, I doubt the truth will emerge in our lifetime. Big Brother's comprehensive and unconditional restriction of information about, as an example, JFK's assassination, is a testament to their reach and to their dominion. We know what they allow us to know, regardless of the veracity, because we are controlled. And this control promoted the rise of absolutism and authoritarianism in our republic. And this is when it all went to hell and be gone. Charles states that he's got to be honest. He had greater expectations for our republic. And much like Pip, our opportunities were limitless, and our destiny was ours to define. And like Pip, we were sidetracked and distracted by people with a very different agenda. And he finds, as I do, our republic's present direction distressing and disillusioning. It's simple, my friends. We traded our liberty for security theater and the promise of a safer, more equitable republic, free from tyrannical rule and restrictive systems based on systemic and endemic white supremacy. But then many Americans, including me, point an accusing finger, some even invent entities to blame for our deterioration and decline. Charles's great-grandmother, Hargis, often reminded him that pointing a finger results in several of your own pointing back at you. Try it. Notice that three fingers are pointing back. And it means that we are more responsible. You and I are more responsible for the situation than those we intend to blame. As Walt Kelly said in his 1971 strip Pogo, we have met the enemy, and he is us. Who can we indict for the lack of progress that we call Congress other than ourselves? We hired these people to represent us to our republic. They theoretically work for us. When we say that, when Charles says we hire these people, we hire them by voting for them over and over and over again. Now, if you're still out there in the workforce, and if your performance were as abysmal as these people's, you would be fired, and rightfully so. If your gardener, your housekeeper, your mechanic did their jobs as poorly as Congress, none of us would hesitate to reprimand them for their deficiencies and subsequently fire them. And yet we continually accept shoddy performance, flimsy excuses, and deflections as justifications and alibis. When we return these miscreants to office, we are exacerbating the problem. It means that we are approving of their lies, their unfulfilled promises, their poor performance. We continue to sanction their graft and their corruption. My friends, our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, most of them attend state-sponsored indoctrination centers. They're called schools. And they do it for 12 years, but they cannot read, nor write, nor even perform simple math upon graduation. Would you consider this a successful education? Do you not believe the statement that I've just shared with you? Cannot read, write, perform simple math upon graduation? There are numerous articles that we have published, both on Federal Observer under the category Village of the Damned, and other ones that we published over on our other site, metropolis.cafe, that will support everything Charles and I have just said to you. 12 years, they cannot read, write, or perform simple math upon graduation. That is not a successful education. It is an education that is designed for failure. Why do we continue to sponsor the demoralization of our children? We are not honoring our accountability to raise them as productive contributors to the republic. Why do we sanction this Marxist bullshit? See, I got the word out. You see, our children are taught that Merkel is systematically and endemically racist. Oh, being white is their fault. We're all accountable for what was done to the black race. We're taught that the resulting harm done decades in the past amends reparations. They're told that the history of this country began in 1619 with the introduction of the slaves. America was built on and by slavery. I've covered that issue twice in the last week. What about sexual deviants, drag queens? Oh, baby, they're all part of the curriculum. Skin color is the determining factor in advancement. Is this education or programming? This sexual deviation and the drag queen business and the sexual exchanges, etc., that's all what's being taught in schools today. Our children learn that biology is a matter of choice. And they now can choose not only their gender, but their sexual orientation by the age of 8? What the hell does this say about the people running the Department of Education and the teachers' unions? Is allowing biological men who identify as women to compete in female athletic competitions fair? Is it equitable? Is it moral to allow them to co-mingle in women's locker rooms. The most... Bear with me here just a second. In just a few moments, and this is earlier than I expected, Michael, we're going to run a rather lengthy audio clip. It is a profound clip. Just hang on. It is a profound clip that is somewhat satirical, but it's not. It says much about the direction of the nation. It says very much about the direction of our leaders. In one particular case, the son of one of our leaders. But give me a moment. I'll give you a go here in a second. So one of the things we have to look at, our previous statement was that asking the question, was it moral to allow students to co-mingle in women's locker room? Men. The most critical aspect of government centers on environmental equity to the exclusion of all else. Big Brother, you see, insists that it's worth the investment of trillions of tax dollars. But does this represent funds wisely invested or pissed away? Are the people promoting this pseudoscience following their own recommendations and requirements? Or is this more of the do as I say and not as I do elitist rhetoric and hyperbole? You see, you have to understand that our government believes, or I mean it's convinced, that spending money we don't have is acceptable and even advisable. Is this fiscal responsibility? Is this how we operate our home, our business, our family? Because we've now reached a point in this country that 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And 51% of Americans earning over $100,000 a year are living paycheck to paycheck. But many are forced to decide between paying rent, insurance, food, medical bills. What happens? How do you react when the bill collectors at the bank call about a bad check or a late payment? Do you realize that our republic has $101 trillion in unfunded debt? Can you even imagine a number this large? Here's some numbers closer to a reality that we can comprehend. Your portion of this debt as a taxpayer right now is $252,535. Or as a citizen of the republic, $96,944. Doesn't matter. It's big bucks. Did you know that our interest payment on this debt is $213 billion for this year alone? That's only the interest. It doesn't even touch the principal amount. Did you know that since Joe Biden took office in 2022, he has increased this debt by $10 trillion. How can we condone all of this? And that we spend the same people to represent us. We send the same people to represent us over and over and over again. Now, this is interesting. We send the same people to represent us over and over and over again. The next section of Charles' article talks about allowing and condoning the abandonment of our Constitution each and every time we let the Bolshevik fanatics control our republic. Take a moment, look into the mirror. The person looking back is responsible. Oh, yeah. Come on. As a citizen of this republic, it is our responsibility to ensure that it's appropriately managed. It's called stewardship, the responsible overseeing and protection of something considered worth caring for and preserving. You know, the Christian Bible contains over 2,300 verses about stewardship. It must be important. Our personal expectations are incredibly high. We demand what we purchase, and if not delivered to our complete satisfaction, our tempers flare. Our voices reach ear-splitting volumes. And yet our expectations for elected representatives are basically non-existent. We accept whatever they give and modify. We lower our expectations accordingly, or maybe we just ignore the contract entirely. There's a contract that Charles references. And I have referenced it many, many times in this past 28, 29 years on the air. Because it's a contract that both Charles and I and God knows how many other people took. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. And I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office in which I am about to enter. So help me God. And I took that oath, or one slight variation to that, on November the 7th, 1995. Partisan politics. A metastasizing tumor in this republic. It emerged and captured it with sophistry and the support of a cabal of carefully placed provocateurs in crucial administrative positions. Their cult of personality is a career politician named bumbling, stumbling, doddering, senile, apparatchik demagogue Joe Biden. He's got his finger poised on the button of nuclear Armageddon. His campaign promises of Xanadu are pipe dreams and rhetoric. And he does the bidding of his bi-coastal elite masters. There's no substance. There is no substance and indeed no pretense of realization. He never meant to follow through, but I'm not sure he's got the mental capacity to do so anyway. Like all our apparatchik demagogues, the goal is to be elected, and once selected, to stay in office as long as possible. And now enters his blood kid, his son, the one who still lives. Interesting enough, Charles sent me an interesting video. Because I look at Biden. I look at the previous presidents we've had. In my personal estimation, I think the last decent human being that sat in the White House was a man named Reagan. Beyond that, the last real, true president we had was taken out in November of 1963. But I look at guys like Biden. I look at his blood kin. We start talking about the things that politicians do and the money and the more proof of the nonsense, the private businesses that the Biden community, the Biden family has created through good, bad, and indifferent. We talk about nuclear war. We talk about what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, etc., etc. What the hell does... My wife is Ukraine by heritage. Both her parents born and raised in the Ukraine. My wife was born in post-war Germany at the end of World War II. And I once asked her father, why did you and mom leave Ukraine and Russia to go to down to Hitler land. Because he was kinder to the Ukrainians than Stalin was. But my wife is 100% Ukraine. She's appalled by everything that's going on here. Why is it we continue to be involved with other parts of the world and their problems? And then I have to take a look at this idiot son. So we're going to take a little bit of a break. We're going to return to Charles' commentary here shortly. But I want you to listen carefully to this. It's nothing you have to visibly see. I can't even find a visual on this. So let's go for it, Michael. Let's play it. I'll be back in a few minutes.
My child called me up just the other day. He said, Dad, I need some crack. Can you help me today? And I had lots of cash, but bills to pay. He said, don't worry, Dad, I'll find another way. He was smoking for I knew it, and away he flew, saying, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And Hunter's in the basement with a silver spoon. The hookers and drugs were gonna be there soon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. I'll be good and high by then, Dad. Yeah, I'll be good and high by then.
Picking through rugs, smoking anything that even remotely resembled crack cocaine.
I'm very proud of my son.
My son came around just the other day. He said, I got me a deal where we can both get paid. Can I trade on your name? I said, sure, okay. Will anyone know? He said, no, no way. And as he walked away, he looked kind of dim and said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah. You know I'm gonna be like him.
He's fixed it. He's worked on it.
And Hunter's in the basement with a silver spoon. Ukrainian bribes were gonna be there soon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. I'll put aside your 10%, Dad. I'll always have your 10%.
So, honey, what are you doing? I said, Dad, I'm fine. He said, you're not fine.
I know how to game the system. Come on. Come on.
Well, he came from Kiev just the other day. Had a smile so big I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. How's our cash supply? He nodded his head and said, great big guy, but what I really need, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. You can take the vet, but watch the boxes, please. And Hunter's in the basement with a silver spoon. Classified papers all over the room. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. I'm getting good and high again, Dad. I'm getting good and high again.
He pointed out the reason why he regrets it is he didn't anticipate that thugs like Giuliani would use it to, in fact, try to embarrass his father. Yes, they are. They're flat thugs.
Come on. This guy is a dog whistle about as big as a foghorn.
I stole an election and my son moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, you owe some cash, I want my cut today. He said, calm down, Dad, you know it's on the way. But my laptop is gone and now it's on you. And now we're both really screwed, Dad. And now we're both gonna be screwed. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he was damn near dumber than me. My boy was dumb as me. And there was Hunter in the basement with a silver spoon. All of our crimes were coming out real soon. When's it all end, son? I don't know when. But we're gonna end up in the pen, Dad. We're both gonna be in the pen.
I am absolutely certain, 100% certain, that at the end of the investigation, that I will be cleared of any wrongdoing.
God save the Queen, man.
Like all the apparatchik demagogues, the goal is to be elected. And once selected, to stay in office as long as possible. No matter the number of lies, no matter the avoidance of truth, We now pick up where we left off. As Charles tries to warn us, nuclear war is a specter we've tolerated and overlooked for over 75 years. And again, we're staring down the Chinese and Russian ICBM silos of the threat. Of course, there's the B team of Iraqistan and North Korea. All it's going to take is a spark to ignite a conflagration we cannot extinguish. We've given all of our adversaries the keys to our weapons locker and probably the launch codes as well, all to prove we're sincere global partners. And if all this isn't enough, internal strife is created to foster a more diverse, inclusive, and equitable, or DIE, order, engineered to instigate and maintain an unbalanced society by dividing this republic of ours. Every crisis facing Merca is a fabrication, an invention specifically designed to foster division. Remember the ancient tactic of divide and conquer? How do you think the left took over? They instigated internal bickering. They pitted us against one another, and while we were busy calling each other racist and arguing the semantics of equity versus equality, we allowed them to hijack our republic. And after listening to the mainstream media for the past few years, my friends, I'm amazed that we're not embroiled in a civil war. If the reported levels of hate and discontent are factual, then Merca should be scorched earth. We should have piles of dead and decayed bodies lining our streets. Our entire cities should be totally destroyed, uninhabitable. And yet there are cities like Portland and Seattle and Los Angeles, New York, San Francisco, the downtown main city is drying up and shutting down. Not a place you ever want to visit again. Except for a few overblown national or natural disasters, American cities are unscathed. There's obviously something wrong with this picture. No, adjusting the vertical and horizontal hole will not make the picture clearer or any better. No, that was a retro reference to old-style television sets, my friends, that required manual adjustments and a funny appliance called a set-top antenna or aerial to receive the signals. Charles's point is that there's no way to change what you see unless you first redefine it. Changing it from wrong to right, bad to good, disturbing to acceptable. You see, America's like the children in a nasty divorce. Somewhere in our republic are a few families that have been spared the ignominy of a divorce. Charles survived the pain and despair twice. The first time he lost his children, was spared that anguish in the second. But it was still torment, however. My parents were divorced when I was probably 6, 7. Dad still hung around. He used to take my sister and I to Kitty Park. Met a young gal. Last time I saw her, she was pregnant. Oh, that's right. She was the wife of my dad's best friend. And the guy's wife became my dad's best friend. Oh, that's a better story. Dad eventually moved to Phoenix. It was 13 years before I saw him. The family did all they could to stop us from having any contact. I changed that. But like Charles said, he vividly recalls the damage that all of that did to both the children. They were convinced that they were at fault and caused the split, the divorce. The damage will never be undone. You cannot unspill a cup of coffee. You can only hope to clean it up. But the damage is already done. There is a stain. The remnants of the spill. And this partisan split in our republic will live in our history in infamy and perpetuity. Along with the damage we've done to our intended ethnic balance and solidarity. Once we unleash the racial epithets, there's no way to unsay them. It's like the spilled coffee. You never get it all back into the cup. Our vision of a divided republic and the abandonment of our Constitution will never be undone or unseen. For many of us, all of this will live in our memories, and unfortunately, depending upon the victor, be recorded or misinterpreted for history. History belongs to the victorious. Charles tells me that his maternal grandmother had called all the assurances and pledges of unification pie crust promises, easily made and easily broken. This is Charles' expectation from now on. I, as well as Charles, and so many of us, are exhausted from the unrealized pie crust promises and assurances from Big Brother. All we ask is peaceful coexistence with our fellow citizens and a government that puts the good of the republic above all else. Charles had greater expectations for this republic. Your America, my America. And then as Charles approaches his twilight years, he expects the republic I swore to honor and defend to reciprocate, to keep its contract with me. And yet Charles' expectations are not unusual or excessive. All he expects is what America promised all of us citizens. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in a safe and secure republic. Are those expectations too great? Amazingly sad. Charles Dickens, July 19th, 2023. Michael, are you with us? Do me a favor. We're not using it to close right now. Is there a chance you can pull up the George Michael piece, Praying for Time? Great. Obviously, I'm assuming you folks heard my request with Michael. It is, I think, more important for us to listen carefully to the words of this song right now. George Michael was a simply amazing talent. We'll be back in a few minutes. Please listen carefully.
Look around now, These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year, yeah, yeah. This is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, there's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to woe, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
I know that there's at least one, sometimes twice a week, we will close the program with that particular piece of music. But after all that we've shared with you in Charles Dickens' words, and I don't apologize to Charles, and he knows that, because there are times that I inserted some of my own words, not to alter his work by any stretch of the imagination, but because he and I think so much alike. We are seeing the same ugliness, the same darkness that you are, the listener. And to instill several little pieces of my own life, because we do share some things in common, Charles and I. Charles and I and many of you. And to close that segment of the program with this phenomenal piece of music, do we have the time? I don't think that there's any doubt about that question. If we continue on in the same direction that we are going now, no, that we do not have the time. But it doesn't mean we give up. It doesn't mean we lock and load and take ourselves out. I've often said to you folks that all the years I've been on the air, all the years that I've had websites and all the fights, the things that we have fought for and fought against, there's times I could just say, screw it all, give it up. But it's not in me. I took that oath. Many of you did as well. I know many women who took that oath to serve as doctors and nurses in that 21 months I was in Vietnam. I don't regret a single day I spent in time in Vietnam. I've often shared with you that I was at greater peace in that 21 months in Vietnam back in the late 1960s than I am in this country today. Because of the kind of things that Charles wrote about and continues to write about. For those of you who will pick up the archives later tonight, I certainly invite you to share them with other folks. Yes. The title of the program tonight is Great Expectations. And I'll not change that. But now that we've listened to this amazing piece of music from George Michael, I began to wonder if maybe I shouldn't have titled the program, Do We Have the Time? Maybe we should combine them. Michael, I'll give you the update, because I believe that that all comes together. It is important. It is imperative. In a few moments, we're going to close with a song that has been a large part of my life for so many years. When I was three, my parents moved from Wisconsin, where I was born, down to Northbrook, Illinois, a suburb 25 miles north of Chicago Loop. There was an amazing musician that I became aware of in the late 50s, who's long since deceased, who was so damned amazing. Oh, by the way, he happened to be a man of color. But that's something that never affected me. His name was Curtis Mayfield. People, get ready. There's a train coming. Will you be ready? Will you have done your job before you get on that train? I don't care what your age is. I don't care what your health is. Don't ever stop this fight. You understand? I received an email nearly an hour ago from a listener and a client who said, 2 years, sir, I've been concerned about your health. Having to deal with the medical industry, the Holy Ghost must have sent his special force angel to protect you. I thank you for that, Greg. It's time for us to go. You take care of yourselves. Lord willing, I'll see you tomorrow. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
People get ready. There's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage. You just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord. So people get ready for the train to Jordan, picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key. Open the doors and board them. There's hope for all among those who love the most. Sinner who would hurt all mankind just to save his own. Have pity on those whose chances grow thinner, for there's no hiding place against the kingdom's throne. You know there's no hiding place. There's no hiding. So people get ready, there's a train to come. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. I say you just thank the Lord. You just thank the Lord. That's why I'm here to say that I believe. I believe. We're gonna make it. We're gonna make it as a human race. People, I believe. I believe. I believe. I believe. You don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord. People get ready. People get ready.
Thank you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.